Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. I hope you're ready today. You are center focus today, and we have such an interesting show. today we are celebrating 200 The Next Chapter with Charlie episodes. And that was even preceded by another 8 to 10 episodes with Terry Hershey. That was permission to be used. So we're 210, and you'd think we'd get the hang of it by now. I think we're getting close. But I'm always trying to improve. And at your suggestion, what we are going to do today is we're going to do a little bit of review, but we're going to do a little bit about of the reason why we're doing the podcast and how we think we can serve our audience and how we can think we can serve people who are in need of discovering adventure, meaning, and awe in their life.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty excited. I have no idea.
I'm a little nervous.
Just interested in what it is, because we're going to go into all sorts of I don't know what. So
that's right.
Why don't we just turn this over to producer Paul? Let him ask his
burning questions.
Burning questions. I'm curious of burning questions. Okay.
Let's
go at it.
Number one, I would be remiss if I didn't say thank you for this journey. This has been, for me and for many of us listening and riding along, a most interesting, sometimes perplexing, sometimes challenging, sometimes deep and thoughtful, sometimes fun and interesting, but it's been a ride. And I'm not sure we knew when we started, I didn't, where this ride was going. Did you?
No, I have no idea. The interesting way it began is I was at I was doing some coaching with a well-known aeronautics company, and I had a colleague who has a fascinating life, and she and I had lunch, and when she was talking to me about her sort of gypsy wanderings, and I was intrigued, I asked so many questions. She said at the end, she said, Charlie, your gift, you must start a podcast and interview people, because you are too curious. You ask too many good questions. And it tickled my fancy. And I thought, a podcast could be fun. So let's try it. And we did try it. And here we are. 200 episodes and 4+ years later.
Yeah, and it evolved. When I met you, here was my impression, right or wrong. A guy who was looking for his own next chapter. You'd had several careers, as we talked about, but the last one was long and successful as an executive coach, coaching big companies, earning six figures, everything you could imagine and more, and it had kind of run its course. You'd reach that age in life where you're supposed to slow down. You're supposed to transition to something else. Your wife said, hey, you've worked hard enough. You deserve it. You're kind of thinking, maybe I do. And so you kind of phased out of that without any real plan. I'm going to just have fun. I'm going to paint. I'm going to travel. I'm going to do all the things that I've wanted to do. And you did some of that. And in walks Charlie and you said, I'm bored. I don't know what to do to fill up the days. I don't feel the same passion and purpose that I did throughout my life. I'm not sure this retirement stuff is for me. And so it started this quest, this question with you. What do people do in the next chapter of their life, whenever that is?
Well, let's take a tiny step back. The genesis of this podcast was not, of this whole new endeavor, was not, I just decided I wanted to change my life. It was the result of an anxiety attack that stopped my whole coaching business.
Yeah.
I was stuttering. I couldn't perform in public. I've been, speaking to groups of up to 5,000 people, And I couldn't speak to five people. And we have no idea what the anxiety was. But I was sort of taken out of my sphere of influence for medical reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I accepted that. It was time. I think I was perhaps 66, 65, 66.
You're at the right age, yeah.
But then it did occur to me, you're right, in the midst, I tried painting, I tried a number of things, but I was haunted for 2 years, Paul. I was haunted with the feelings of uselessness and boredom.
Yeah.
I was used to a very full calendar, so I didn't have a whole lot of free time. I had busy time. But then the uselessness, I've always done something that's been impacting somewhere, and what was I doing? I was sitting around painting, reading, writing, drawing, and
touching no one but yourself or your immediate circle, yeah.
Yeah, or my immediate psyche, one of the two. I'm not sure which is, that's probably a more dangerous spot. But It really settled, it was very, very troubling, and I came out of it thinking I can do things of purpose. And when my friend Taryn suggested the podcast, I had just started the blog, it all seemed to come together,
mm-hmm.
and that just was the beginning of feeling like, if I can help just a handful of people out there with ideas about meaning, adventure, and awe.
That's your big three, meaning, adventure, and awe. I don't know that...
Continues to be.
I don't know that most of us live a life, sad to say, but I think it's true, really, ordinary, everyday people from the richest to the poorest. Do most of us really have a lot of meaning in our life? Your family, for many of us, that's our meaning. Maybe our job or we built something has some meaning to it. But meaning, what was the other one? Meaning,
adventure, and awe.
Adventure. That's one we sort of give up some along the way. You were an adventuresome soul. As I've come to know you, you were kind of a wild hippie. You took off. Talk about adventure. Talk about that adventure in life when you've shared that a couple of times. You're in college on a scholarship at UCLA. Hooray. Buckle down. Stay here. And instead, you got on the road and did what?
I hitchhiked around the country. I grew my hair to my shoulders, had a beard, had a Harley Davidson knucklehead, for those of you who know.
Oh, yeah.
Motorcycles, it was a rigid frame knucklehead with a suicide clutch. You had to shift it with your hand. You could not shift it. I mean, it was a shift down below by your leg that you shifted just like a car.
Oh, I didn't know that. Talk about suicide,
And then because it's a chopper, it has no brakes on the front because it's got to look too cool, right?
That's right.
So you pull up like in San Francisco and you pull up on a hill and you can't back down.
Yeah.
And you've got to take your foot off the brake and put it on the clutch. So you're backing down ever so slightly, trying to engage the engine. And that was a funny trip. It was a searching time in my life. Because of the situations of my early childhood, I never really settled.
Yeah.
I settled in my adopted home.
Right.
And I settled with my adoptive mother, who was a godsend. And she took a crazy child and made him somewhat sane, but not totally sane. And so that's what I think I'm born with a gift of curiosity. And it became even more curious in difficult times. So I tried, I experimented, and that's why I left. That's why I left the gymnastic team, and college didn't interest me.
At UCLA, this is a big deal, and you just, I'm going to be Jack Kerouac and go out and hit the road here.
And then we did. We took a 3-month trip, three guys. In 1970, hitchhiked across the country all the way to Toronto, Canada.
That's even crazier. A thumb and a backpack.
Three backpacks and a guitar. There were three guys hitchhiking. We would have people pick us up. And they, I bet a third of the time or more, people said, do you want to come home to our house and spend the night?
Really?
And they would do our laundry. They would feed us.
Wow,
and
just, different age.
It was a whole different age.
You wouldn't let anybody in your house for fear they'd be mass murderers now or something.
I know.
So you were born with that sense of wanderlust, part of it out of bad circumstances. You've talked a great deal in this show very openly about your childhood. Your father was, parents were alcoholics? Is that
my father was, yeah.
And so they kind of would drop you off and then pick you up and drop you off, and people would keep you for a while and then you'd go leave. And so there was no sense of permanency.
Not just for a few hours, for a few months.
Yeah, right. There was no sense of permanency. You didn't think anybody really wanted you or you were going to stay very long anywhere. And so they're kept moving you around till finally this woman came into your life and adopted you and took you in and gave you some sense of permanency. But so you grew up with that kind of, for good or bad, this wanderlust, this belief that change is always coming. So I guess I'm going to embrace it and be curious about it rather than fighting it and fearing it like so many do. I don't know, though, as you got on and you built a career and you get married and you have a kid and things, did that adventure still stick with you, or did that get put on the shelf for a while?
Oh, no. The adventure always stayed.
Always? Okay.
Always stayed. I was, until Austin was about 7, I still traveled a lot. I went to Canada quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I did international travel with, I had my own company, but I was an external trainer for Chevron.
Mm-hmm.
Chevron sent me to 7 countries and
all over the place,
continents,
yeah,
to deliver environment. I was selected to do, I had these weird things that happened to me. I somehow was on the environmental team, and I was just a presenter. I was a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
They took me to Aberdeen, where they wanted to create their policy 500, which was their environmental policy.
Okay.
In
Big
Aberdeen,
deal.
Aberdeen, Scotland. And I was part of the decision making of what
wow.
was.
I
and I know
that.
You know, I've never taken an environmental course.
But you're the guy.
It's just logic.
How we're going to talk this through? Think this through. So massive impulses to change, to explore, to
thoughtful,
grow.
Thoughtful. I am impulsive, but in big things, it's a thoughtful. It's an impulse, but it's thoughtful. I will. You know,
okay.
I don't just go off stupid, willy-nilly.
Wake up one day and say, I quit. I walk out the door. Yeah.
I've not done that yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. We planted a seed in there. All right, so now he walks in. You're forced, pulled out of your career. You're trying to sell yourself, well, maybe it's kind of time. I've done this for a long time. I'm at the age. Society says slow down. Society says enjoy. The golden years, the last chapter is supposed to be what? Unfruitful, unfulfilling, just fun?
Well, you know, I take a different view, Paul. I look at life as four seasons.
Yes,
and
talk
four
about that, right.
And I think we've mentioned it in mm-hmm. the past, is that life begins at 20,
mm-hmm.
because you're just kind of figuring out
You're
things.
Forming yourself, right, yeah.
And
yeah.
at 20, from 20 to 30, early 30s, you know, the time spans are loose.
Right.
You're planting seeds.
Mm-hmm.
You're finding out what grows. Where am I going to land? What
first
works?
Job, first love, school, find your way,
and
travel
then maybe
around.
Maybe you change into something else and you're finding it out. In your 30s, you become, that is what I call the springtime of life.
Mm-hmm.
Spring is planting seeds. The next is summer, where things are really growing.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens 35-ish to 50 or 55-ish.
I mean, if you're going to be hot, that's when you're hot.
Yeah, and you're focused on your career, you're focused on your marriage, mm-hmm. you've got so many external motivators.
And you feel like you can do it all.
Yeah, you know, you kind of do feel like you can do it.
Even if you
all.
Can't, you got
you
this kind of optimism
yeah.
and for many.
Yeah.
Maybe some give up, fall out along the way. I understand there are exceptions, but I think for many of us, that summer is exciting. The summer of 69 for you, you know, the 70 or whatever it was. The summer of love.
69, hitchhiking around the country, the summer of love, protesting with all the hippies in Berkeley
yeah.
for crying out loud in 1969. I protested in Watts with the Black Panthers.
Sure, Why not?
With the black pants. Because, of course. Because even though I was not black, I had
solidarity.
Hippie long hair.
Solidarity.
And so we were considered solidarity at that time.
One. The rebels.
And so
Hell's Angels on one side and the Black Panthers on the other here. Yeah right.
Yeah.
Renegades.
It's not, you know, it can be looked at renegades, but I think it's that curiosity, it's that search. There's there's something missing. There's something else out there. Something that's why I've had so many careers, and I last for 7 to 10 years in a career, and I'm doing something else, and it's time for a new challenge.
And some of those, we'll just touch on those. Some of those we've gotten to know you. So okay, the hippie, sometimes the radical, the protester. Turns into the evangelical minister.
No. That was a leap. That's a leap right there.
Yeah.
Because you are right. I was raised pretty conservative. I was on the athletic teams in high school. I was on, you know, school. What do you call it? I was the chief justice. You know,
I was on the student council. Right.
And so there was. I was truly. For a lot of my life, I've been truly Two-Face in Batman, is that I have a side of me.
Oh, I see. I have Harvey Two-Face, or whatever you call his name.
Yes, yeah. Harvey Two-Face. I had this face that fit with all of, you know, what all the teachers loved.
The public
face. And I would do really great there. But I also had this dark side to me, and I liked the dark side characters. Mm-hmm. I liked the characters. I was
most actors do. Were you an actor at heart here? Yeah.
If I wasn't in athletics, I would have been in drama.
Think so? There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But to give you an example, we used to before the high school football game, because of my job as chief justice, I had to raise the flag, and so I had to wear
the uniform or
navy
something.
Blue sport coat, great sure. slacks, and a tie, and go out and you know somebody else raised the flag, but I was kind of like the one watching
it. They don't let the hippie go raise the flag.
And so, well, this was long before the hippie.
Yeah,
this was in high school.
Okay, this was in high school. Mid-60s. So it was starting to come. Yeah.
Mid-60s, but then you know what we did? You know, I've never gotten published on this. What we did is my parents would be at the high school game. Mm-hmm. So I would tell my parents I had to come home and change clothes because I couldn't stay at the game in a suit. I'd have to get my varsity jacket on and my jeans and
something.
Tennis shoes and all that. And we'd go back and we'd all buy a six-pack of beer and drink it at my house. And I'm supposed to be the chief justice, the guy that's catching people for this.
These offenses.
As a matter of fact, a really fun story is after one of our parties, I was asleep in bed the next morning, and my mom says, "Oh, a Coors bottle top." And I go, "Oh my gosh,
busted.
I'm screwed. This is all over." And I had a long-haired Persian cat, and the cat's name was Pepper. And my mom said, "Look what Pepper dragged into the house."
Pepper, you bad cat. Pepper.
So that was kind of my life. You know, it would be partly on the good side. I was, every girl I dated, I was their parents' favorite date.
Then,
you know, oh
then
my god.
This
goodness.
Other guy on the other side, walking the dark side. All right, so this dual personality, it sounds like it kind of carried through your life here. On the one hand, you're walking conservative ways, and other times you're walking kind of on the wild side, going back and forth. You've talked about both impulses. Being an evangelical minister, how did that come about? Where did that pull out of nowhere here? Because you'd had jobs and stuff. This wasn't like out of college. Usually you'd get the calling early, and you would think you went to Bible college early on, and you'd do all this stuff. This was later in life.
Well, I quit college.
Well, originally, yeah, right.
Yeah, and then I came back, and I went to seminary, and I finished my baccalaureate.
But you must have been, what, late 20s, 30s or something? You weren't like a...
32.
Yeah, you weren't a kid anymore, right?
32. And there's a saying at that age that you realize it's unfortunate that education is wasted on the young.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
Because as you get older, I was there actually to learn, not so much for a rite of passage.
Right.
I wanted to learn, so I spent a lot of hours studying. I graduated, you know, academically high.
But that was a pretty much commitment back to the good kid, the right path, the moral and straight and true and everything here. You went to a conservative.
I was impacted by the influence of Christ, and that, not that I had to do things to earn my way, mm-hmm. you know, so I didn't have that legalistic foundation, mm-hmm. but I had the loving relationship sort of
even in those wandering years, or
no, as I became a Christian,
right?
Because I became a Christian, and then I went off to seminary.
And you said you almost became a Christian to prove that it wasn't right, as I recall.
Somebody, not almost, I did.
Somebody challenged you, and you said, I'll prove this is a buoy, a hooey, whatever. Yeah.
And she had me read a couple books of the Bible. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of reading them, I had a spiritual awakening, and I sensed the Holy Spirit talking to me, saying, Charlie, you need to know this is not bullshit.
That's what I'm trying to say politely. Yes, right.
that this Jesus thing is real,
yeah.
And it just overwhelmed me. It just overwhelmed me,
and it has not stopped since.
Even in my times of great
stress
involvement
and trial,
in the church, and other times where I'm really out there.
All right, so now you get into this, and you go, well, I guess we've made the choice. We had two roads, and you took the road less traveled. You took the road, you know, not the, you were in business and did some other things and decided, no, I'm going to go this different route. Now you're off on a different journey, different path. That took you to some pretty big mega churches here in Southern California?
Yeah, it took me to one. It was, at the time, it was called South Coast Community Church. It's since changed its name to Mariners.
Mm-hmm.
But
big
it
here
was,
in Southern California, big.
Yeah, big church. It's much bigger than we were, but we were up to 15,000,
mm-hmm.
and 12 to 15,000. And I was in charge of adult training and leadership, mm-hmm. volunteers, and single adult ministry. And I had 900 to 1,000 people in my single adult ministry.
There you go. So very committed, very deeply held faith into all this. Why give it up? Why aren't you still doing that today? The impulse took in. That little other voice said, Charlie, what's over on that other side of the hill there?
I felt the church, being a part of a mega church,
mm-hmm.
for me, the role of the pastor, especially in single adults, is like not a tour guide, but what do you call them on a boat? On the
oh, like the cruise director?
The cruise director.
Yes, right.
The cruise
the love
director.
Boat.
I was there to get single adults dates, and you know, and it just...
Connect them.
It just was not part of what I was, and so I wasn't really hardwired for that, but I lost your question because you asked a good question.
So I'm saying you're in this. You've made a commitment. You put a lot of effort and thought into it. It means a lot to you. Why aren't you still doing it? What
happened?
Oh,
I am. I'm stronger. I'm not hardwired to be in the physical ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hardwired to be a Christian out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, my foray into contemplative prayer and mystic Christianity has just totally made my whole faith. It's reformed my faith.
We're going to come to that as the last chapter of this story here. So Charlie comes in, and you had also, dare I say, somewhere along the way here, discovered the joys of alcohol and having a good time, and and that took a
wait,
little.
Wait, what are you looking for? My arrest record?
No, just saying. There's this duality going on here. There's one thing, and then there's a little voice that still wants to go off and have a good time and see the world and party and whatnot. And for a while, you held those two together, but at some point, that became a challenge too, and you joined AA and other things.
Yeah, got into a little bit of trouble enough to make me go into AA. And, you know, it's not so much that I don't think alcoholism and drug addiction is, isn't this fun let's go do this.
That's what you assume. You assume it's because one party goes too far.
Yeah, it's not that. You know what it really is it's distraction and numbing from the pain that's going on in our life. You can look at addicts and alcoholics, which are the same thing, and there is this sense of something's missing, and what isn't missing is not desirable. What is coming across to you is not desirable, and so the drug and the alcohol numbs that, distracts you from that, takes that period of time thinking, but then after you sober up or whatever you do, you're faced with the same issue again.
And for you, you kind of talked openly about it. There was a long period going back to that youth, feeling unwanted, unloved, and that somehow still ate away at you. All these people love you. All these people, you're at a big church, a giant. You couldn't surround yourself with a bigger community in a church than the churches you were at. This wasn't a little chapel somewhere here.
And very supportive, yeah.
And very supportive and everything, and yet somewhere in there, somewhere along the way, you got a loving wife and a family and other things here. There's still a little voice in you that says, Charlie, nobody likes you. Nobody loves you. Nobody wants you.
Yeah, you're unworthy. Yeah, that is the sad voice of, you know, I can speak it in psychological terms, and that's the sad voice of reconciling our past and our missingness and the holds that we developed in growing up. But then there's another side that is the God side, and it is sort of a failure, sort of remiss in incorporating this loving nature of God.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd like to talk about that just a bit, because that's so important to me right now, in that we view Scripture very transactionally as opposed to transformationally.
Religion itself, we've talked about, is a slot machine for many of us. You put into your coins, you say your three Hail Marys, I'm Catholic, and whatever it is, and then something's supposed to pop out.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not that's not the way it works. I believe the Bible was written, and but redemption history, the history of God and creation, God always foresaw the cross, knew the cross was going to come from the very beginning, from day one of creation.
Yeah, it wasn't a surprise.
Knew the cross was going to come. And that, and if you look at it, and people say, well, why did God allow suffering and sin? Well, the one thing that I have concluded, you know, I don't have references necessary to support it, but my conclusion is, how else would we know love, mercy, forgiveness, kindness, acceptance, all of those wonderful attributes of God? We could not know those without being broken human beings. If we were perfect human beings, like in the beginning of creation, we could never have known mercy and kindness and grace and forgiveness.
You have to go without to recognize the value of gaining, getting something.
St. Augustine said something to the effect of, and now this is quite controversial, but that's okay. St. Augustine said something to the effect was, it was better for sin to occur that Jesus could be glorified on the cross than for sin to never occur.
Wow.
Because the glory of Jesus on the cross, and I'll just, this would be my last little preaching, but the glory of Jesus on the cross means the redemption and the cleansing of all sin unconditionally. So we don't have to jump through hoops. And God is seeing this from the present, from the past, from the present, and from the future. That is the lens that God looks at all of these through. And when we can finally adapt and understand this sort of loving, accepting, caring nature of God, then we can see the brokenness in our sort of
our lives.
Innate sin nature in us.
So I'm going to say one more thing, and then we'll take a quick break here, come back and delve into what you got out of this podcast. this journey. That's who you were. That's where you came from. That's how you approached this thing. What strikes me as I hear your story, and it's particularly your story of redemption, is that it's kind of like the next chapter, isn't it? Kind of like God has sort of written in. We all think there is no next chapter. I'm going to stay in this chapter. I like this chapter, or I'm stuck in this chapter. Good or bad, this is it. We don't think of a next chapter very often. It's hard to write another chapter in our life. It's easier to stay where you're at, good or bad.
And the next chapter really is a continuation of the present chapter.
Exactly.
It's just the evolution. Ilia Delio, Franciscan nun, writes about evolution. But I think we need to understand, especially from a Christian context, that Darwinian evolution does not equal evolution. It is just one aspect, one subset of evolution. Evolution is much grander than just particular Darwinian type evolution. And she talks about the evolution of love, that love will continue to evolve throughout all past, present, and post-Christianity.
Well, you've continued to evolve. We're going to come back, we'll take a little break, and then we'll evolve into where I'm going to walk back through the last 200. Talk about some fun things, talk about some unusual things, some surprising things, where you were, where you're at today. That's what we're going to talk about in your next chapter of this continuing journey here, called The Next Chapter, right after this. All right, we're back. The next chapter with Charlie. 200 episodes in. We're taking a little breather. Take a little break, as my grandmother used to say. And to a little reflection, a little time for reflection, where we've been, how we got here, and where we're going. Let's talk about when the next chapter launched. You were not sure where it was, what's the message, what's the purpose, where is this leading? But you were convinced there was a next chapter in your life. And this was maybe a way to explore that for you and for your audience as well.
You know, there's always been a next chapter in my life. I have never, because if there isn't, I will make one.
Yeah.
That I will figure out something different and something unusual to do.
Complacency is not your sweet spot here. Staying.
Yeah, but it's not. But it's not sort of an anal drivenness. It's sort of an internal. Sort of an internal barometer that's telling me, okay, we're pointing, true north is now changed. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think we realized early on, at first I looked at the podcast, The Next Chapter with Charlie, is that I would propose opportunities for next chapters to other people.
Yes, and right.
And it had to do with meaning, adventure, and awe.
And you'd show people, bring in people who'd done that, and maybe it would inspire somebody to do the same.
Yeah. Yes. And we had several good guests that had kind of moved on and done a next chapter.
Who was the woman who was the coach for you for a while? And she, really kind of on a shoestring budget, travels the world.
That was Taryn Vogel.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I call her, you know, my life coach, my shaman. She's sympathetic to Christianity, but that's not her big forte. She's into shamanism, and she's really helped me. There's, you know, I look at a lot of wisdom from a lot of different sources that I think is all.
So she and others you brought people in to inspire people. Look, don't give up at whatever age, young age, later stage in life. Whether you're in spring or fall or winter, there is an opportunity for adventure. There is an opportunity to growth, and don't block yourself to that.
And I then, Paul, began to take that personally.
Yes.
Rather than saying, I need to tell other people how to enjoy the next chapter of meaning, adventure, and awe. And I realized I needed learning myself, so that's why. If anyone takes the time to look at my website at thenextchapter.life, L-I-F-E, and you look at the titles of my podcast and my blogs, they are all over the damn where.
Yes,
you know,
right.
There is, you know, you cannot, except you can see it's always about a next chapter. It's always about a movement, always about an opportunity, a change, understanding your current life. So, you know, your current sort of psychological or, mm-hmm. or physical state and how you can move from there to a more wondrous state. And I started seeking guests that it was twofold. It would be either there was a subject I wanted to discuss, mm-hmm. or now, right now of our recent last 10 or so podcasts, I'm about learning. Mm-hmm. I want to, you know, I'm picking people I can learn from, mm-hmm. that can help me.
And that's been an evolution of the show. So first it was, I'm the coach. I'm going to bring you examples that I know in my life or I'm going to find in our life and hold them out as an example to you. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm going to show you what others have done, and maybe that will inspire you to do what I think is important. Adventure, meaning, all these things here, moving forward. Next chapters, right? Don't hold back. Then it becomes, wait a minute, maybe this is kind of about me exploring my next chapter, too, and people riding along. And you started riding all over the place. You're going around the world. You're going to crazy, wild, dare I say, wild, weird experiences. Was the one you went to Hawaii and locked yourself in a room or some group?
For 10 days, yeah. Yeah, I did try to experience a lot of that, but I wanted to comment on isn't it rather presumptuous to think that for 200 shows I can tell people how to live their lives?
Many do. I agree with you, but many do. That's why they come. I'm the coach. I'm the financial coach. You were a coach. You were a spiritual coach. People are always coming to you for some sort of guidance. Tell me the path. Show me the way. You're supplying the answers.
That's why I thought I wanted to get other people to supply the answers. But you know, there's as we're talking here, it's occurring to me. There's two sorts of next chapter. There's more than two sorts of next chapter.
Two jump out at you. Okay.
But two strike me right now, and one is that physical life change, career change, you know, God forbid, marriage change, right, you know, just major changes. But you know, there's another thing that's really important. And what kind of person do I want to be in my next chapter?
Mm.
And kindness, compassion, goodness, care for other people have taken over everything. I no longer need... I'm at a position now where I really don't feel like I need to prove myself.
Mm-hmm. You know, not about fame and fortune, the drivers of youth.
My ego's satisfied, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so interesting. It reminds me, we do a lot of shows here in the network. We do one on car design. And the guy who, he was a big car designer for Nissan, now he designed the new Zoox self-driving taxi for Amazon and other crazy projects. And he's very upbeat and very positive. And I'm like, really? And he brought his mentor on, this guy Tom Montana, who had designed the Mazda Miata. And I get it now. He's like Mr. Miyagi from, you know, the Karate Kid.
Yeah,
you must become the car. You must feel the handle. You are the handle.
Yes.
You know, this very Zen way
rub
of looking.
Rub on, rub off.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's like. So anyway, they're talking about this, and he said, you know, because he's doing self-driving cars now. I said, that scares a lot of us. The robots are taking over. That sounds dystopian and dark. I'm not driving anymore. I'm not in control. And he always laughs when I say that. He says, Tom Matano always said, the guy who taught him, we're in the future. We're car designers. Today, we're looking at, every day he wakes up, he's 7 years in the future, looking at where the car kind of going to be in 7 years. Not where it's been, not where it is today. He lives his life in the future. So when it finally comes out, it's like, I've been living with that for 7 years. What's so new about that? So he said, we have a choice. Future is ours to design. So we can make a dark future. We can make a happy future. Why not make a happy future?
Why not make a happy future? And you know, I don't want to get too deeply into Richard Rohr's Falling Upward, his two halves of life, but mm-hmm. you know, in our early, which lasts till 50 or 60, it is very, and appropriately so, it is very ego-driven that we're trying to confirm ourselves, trying to confirm our identity as legitimate human beings.
Mm-hmm.
after that identity is confirmed, we move what is his name? His name is eluding me. Bob Buford wrote in a book Halftime, subtitled From Success to Significance.
Success to Significance. Boy, that's the transition, isn't it?
Isn't it not? And the second half is more significance, where, you know, you've kind of covered that ego-centered. I mean, it's still there. It's not like you ever lose your ego.
You're still competitive. You still want to win.
You're competitive and you want to be liked. But it is much less important than how do you serve other people, and it doesn't have to be like in the charity that I'm involved in. You know, you don't have to be involved in a big charity or a big movement. It is all about, it's quite simply, Paul, two words: be nice. You know what this world would be like? I mean, what our country would be like today if we thought about, let's be nice.
You sound like another show of ours. Teresa McQueen's an attorney. She's a general counsel for the Western Growers Association. Big job, big attorney. You'd think she'd be tough as nails, you know, or out to, you know, enforce the rules and protect the company and all the things. And I'm sure she does a lot of that. But she constantly keeps saying, you know, if we were just nicer to each other, we wouldn't have to sue each other all the time. If we didn't think the employees out to steal us and rob us, and if we didn't think the manufacturers out to screw us, the employers out to screw us, if we didn't start with that assumption, maybe we wouldn't be so fast to jump at litigation. If we tried to accommodate people, if we tried to understand people, and if we were just a little nicer to everybody, we wouldn't need to sue each other as much.
Oh, brilliant. She and I need to talk to each other.
Yeah. I'm like, I always say to Teresa, this isn't what I think of attorneys. Your job is to sue people. She's like, I know, but we don't have to sue as much as we do. We don't have to be as litigious as we are.
And her job also is to mitigate. It's to try to keep it from going to trial.
Exactly. So she's always trying to say, let's take the positive. Let's take the preventative road. Let's take the way where we avoid conflict. You know, I'll get in there and fight if I have to, but let's not go there. That too many people want to go there immediately.
You know what I'm going to change topics just a little bit because I know, are we getting near time?
5-10 minutes, yeah.
Okay. You know, I personally, and I think a lot of listeners would agree that 200 podcasts is a lot.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's because we don't get one every single week, so it's probably 4 1/3, probably 4 1/3 years.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's a season of shows here. It's an ongoing, and it's evolved. I guess that's the whole point. Just like your life evolved to this point, this show has evolved from I'm going to show others to others can ride along with me, I'm going to experience and do it myself, to now going deeper, a little more spiritual, a little more inside yourself, other sorts of things, more contemplative, if that's the right word.
Well, that's where my life is now, and
which means a contentment, because you can't get contemplative if you're upset or angry or lacking or still fighting or still seeking or whatever. It seems, I would suspect there has to be a certain level of satisfaction to sit back and relax and take the time to think.
It is the contemplative really is a reflective time of observing the goodness of God in all things that are going on. And that even in your sufferings and your difficulties, you know, I'm reading the Mystics and I'm in Julian of Norwich now, who's, you know, just
Julian of Norwich. Gee, that's on top of my hit parade here. I gotta go get that book right now here. Yeah.
If I told you about Julian, she's amazing. Late 1300s to the early 1400s.
Yeah.
And lived during the bubonic plague. So there were some books written about her and how to deal with the pandemic.
Interesting.
Because she had to live through several decades of the bubonic plague. But she is very much into ordinary mysticism, that our spiritual life is evidenced by the way we treat other people. And I have two people in my life, I won't name their names, that are my spiritual barometers, because they're very difficult people. My wife is not difficult for me to deal with, But it is just the responsibility I have to my wife.
And she's different than you. You've talked about it. You're a yin and a yang. You know, she sounds like she's a solid and you're a liquid.
I've never thought, I'm silent for a moment, I've never thought about that. But, you know, that really is the truth. You know, I could flesh that metaphor out quite a bit. I think it's important. It's very helpful in our life. Whether it's a spiritual life or it's a goodness life, you know, whether it's spiritual in the formal religious sense or spiritual in just wanting to keep up with, keep in tune with the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
The way we treat other people is the way we really view God and we view life.
I'll give you another way to look at it. You're talking about ordinary everyday as opposed to special extraordinary. I thought one of the most extraordinary things, I wrote it down on the wall here. I have not taken it down since you and Terry said this at one of your shows. And maybe it's a thought that came from somebody else and you guys knew this and you just shared it, but it was brand new to me. And the thought is this. We all think of holy, spiritual, as an extraordinary activity. I have to go to the top of the mountain to meet the guru. I have to follow the way of the cross. I have to do some. I have to whip myself in the back. I got to go to church. I got to do something extraordinary, out of my ordinary. And you guys said the ordinary is the hiding place of the holy.
It is. Exactly.
That's mind-boggling. If I didn't learn anything in 4 years, I learned that. I talk about that all the time to people. It's the ordinary, everyday things we do that matters, that determines if we're holy and happy and successful, et cetera, et cetera. It's not the... We all think of success. Money, fame is an extraordinary thing. You've got to be extra smart, extra gifted, extra lucky, extra hardworking, something. It's not for the ordinary. And yet... Wealth, like any spiritual wealth, physical wealth, any of these things at some level. I mean, maybe not extraordinary wealth, but everyday wealth. There is a wealth and happiness waiting for people, if I'm hearing you right, hiding in the ordinary.
Oh, the holy is very ordinary because it is anywhere God is present is holy. And God is, and we do not understand, like Frederick Buechner writes, when he goes into his workstation, you know, where he has little gadgets, he says that's one of the holiest rooms in his place, because this is where God is present. God is present in the everyday.
In the real, when you're really present, you and Terry talk about being present. Don't just sleepwalk through life. Be present every moment. Terry used to give that exercise where he'd send people out and they'd walk out and then come back and say, what'd you see? I saw nothing. I walked out. It was a tree. I came back. Did you hear the bird? Did you see the brook? No, I walked out. I came back. I'm already thinking about coming back. I'm not thinking about where I am. I'm thinking in the future. I got to get this over and get back. I'm not.
Oh, that, you know, I have to get this over. That is so... That's so time limited in our view.
Mm-hmm.
I just had some appointments this morning that my wife had a doctor's appointment that I took her to that ran late and caused me to be late for a phone appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe how anxious I was over missing this phone appointment.
Absolutely.
That was... Simply, it was not a business phone appointment. It was a phone appointment that I was looking forward to with a great friend. And I started thinking about it and said, what's the issue? We can just reschedule. We'll have that phone call later this week. It's not...
But allowing yourself to just to stay in the moment and react to things and be aware and enjoy them and experience them and all the stuff... We're rushing through life, and then at the end, we're looking back and wishing we'd done this or trying to reminisce, wish we had more time. That's the beauty of podcasting.
And I think that's one of the directions of the next chapter with Charlie, is that we're trying to show people opportunities for finding, although we don't put it in those terms.
You don't list finding the three takeaways,
discovering the glory of ordinary life and discovering love in ordinary life. Love is not some special, unique thing as much as it's an everyday occurrence that calls for diligent effort because we are so tender and
so tempted to look otherwise, so distracted, so short attention span, so much noise, so many
but
things.
But we're also troubled so easily.
Oh.
We get angry so easily.
Oh, yeah.
And
more than ever, I think, at least in my life. So here's another one that fits that same thing, and then we'll kind of wrap up with some of these. The one that I got the most, the two I got the most kick out of all the years you've done these shows to
oh
this
my,
jump on
went, I'm anxious.
One is, I forgot who it was, your other coach.
Dina,
I guess it was. You had to be a pirate. And she says, and she's making you role play. So let's make you be a pirate on the air. Now, this sounds like Chili Child's Play. And at first you approach it like, and you're going, arr, or something. No, you didn't go, arr. You were like, I'm a pirate or something. You didn't do all the manifestations that we would all do. Arr, the funny noises and the yarr, matey, and all this stuff here. And you were like a pirate with a purpose. You were like a pirate with a plan. And I started laughing, and I started thinking, you're really revealing a lot about yourself. You were a different kind of pirate than I've ever heard of here. You were a... And so as silly as it started, all of a sudden you playing the pirate did bring out some of your personality traits
and
some of your qualities.
That exercise with Dina Crowder, you know, I don't have her website right offhand, but I think it's dinacrowder.com. I think you can find something from there. She does this thing on archetypes, and we all have mm-hmm. 9 archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
That was life
the
impacting.
Explorer, the hero, or something, all these different
things. Well, yeah, I had...
I don't know what they all are, but yeah, there's a whole bunch of them, right?
Yeah. And they help you understand different characteristics of you, that mm-hmm. you know, different bodies of you, that you're not one single entity, you're a conglomeration of all of these
right.
wonderful entities, and we're all a different subset of those... Of that
so asking you to be a pirate was different than me being it. And after you got over, I said, that's not the way a pirate talks. That's not at all that's how your pirate talks. That's not how I think of a pirate talks.
But even then, if you see it, as you said, it explained a lot about me personally. It explains a lot about what we've talked about in that I see the integration of the good and the natural.
Yeah, you were like a good pirate. That was what.
Yeah, but I was also a natural pirate. I was a pirate. You know, I didn't mind robbing and stealing. You know? I just didn't see killing innocent people.
Well, what's the point? Yeah. All right. So that was one that I got a kick out. That was a while ago. And another one. There's so many that I just remember and I chuckle or I laugh or I think, well, that was really another one. A more recent one, serendipity. You even admitted by the end, I've never heard you do this in 200 episodes, where you changed your mind on the fly. Usually it's like, I got to think about it, or no, I'm not so sure, I believe that.
Oh, what was that? You got to tell me.
The guy comes on and he's talking about the power of serendipity in life and you versus planning. And you kind of at the end said, you know what, maybe as much as I thought I was planning my life, I'm a planner. I plan to do this. I plan to do that. You say, I'm spontaneous, but only after I think about it. You know, when you left the ministry, you said that loudly to the world, 1 year I give myself and I'll be out of this job.
Right.
Not 1 day, but 1 year I'm going to do this. So there's some thought, there's some process. And all of a sudden you said, maybe it hasn't all been planning. Maybe serendipity, just the happenstance, the sheer whim of things has been more influential in my life than I hear. I think I'm guiding my life. Maybe it's just been more reacting to all these serendipitous things here. And not always recognizing that when I do recognize them, there's some value in it. Too many times I don't see, I don't make that connection until later or too late or miss it.
You know, I can't help but in my life is seeing, for me, in my perspective, is the intervention of God. And I think serendipity is the intervention of God.
The whisper of God in your ear here.
And I can be heading along a path and all of a sudden something unique, something different occurs.
So where did that come from?
And fortunately, I'm open to listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can easily close those off and stay on our track rather mm-hmm. than being open to listen to say, I wonder. And that's a...
There you've just created the subtitle for the whole show. I wonder.
Oh, not bad. That is, and that is a defining characteristic of my style.
So I'm left to ask you one question. I wonder where this goes from here. Who knows?
Well, I know right now we are doing a series because we had a bunch of requests, a boatload of requests from authors, new authors, and so mm-hmm. we're doing
you've
those.
You've been in a kick with a lot of authors.
Yeah, and that's been fun, but now I'm sensing I want to get not back to just people I know, but I'm looking for people that I've really admired,
mm-hmm.
and I want to know what their life is. So we are going to be checking out, attempting to get a little bit more well-known
reaching
guests.
Higher, reaching yeah. above, batting above your whatever your weight, fighting above your weight class here.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. I tell everybody, and if we get her, I'll be so tickled. I'll probably be dumbfounded and not be able to speak to her. But I want Naomi Shihab Nye.
That's what you say.
You know, who's a great poet.
The other one that struck me. I have to throw this one in. I remember the debate we had about the guy who wrote Dinner with Epicurus. You're always quoting, at that time you were quoting from his
Daniel
book.
Daniel Klein.
New York Times bestseller, blah, blah, blah. And you and Terry are going off about this. And I said, call him, email him. He's not going to come on my little podcast. It's not a little podcast. It's a life transformative journey here. It's a radio show. It's a podcast. It's as little or big as you want to see it as. Why wouldn't he want to contribute? You're telling me why he won't. I'm saying, why not? And so you went home after 10 times arguing with me, and you said, all right, I'm almost like to prove that the Bible isn't true. I'm going to go back and show you this can't work. And you sent a LinkedIn request to this guy out of the blue, and within like 10 minutes he wrote back and said, sure, I'll be on the show.
Yeah, it was great, and he was on twice. Mm-hmm. He was a very interesting character.
So those are the moments that I remember, the milestones along the way that I'll recall. And each one of them you've pivoted from whatever the original purpose was to it almost became about your journey as much as others' journeys. First, you were just curious of others' journeys, or really almost suggesting, let me show you. I won't tell you what to do, but I'm going to show you that people did it. And then maybe I should go do this too. You discovered wells of life. You discovered all these other passions and purposes. And then all of a sudden, there was some point you went deeper and went within. And all this suddenly, this contemplative Charlie, I'm turning you from an evangelical into a Catholic here. All of a sudden, you're a...
Well, the Catholics think I'm Catholic.
You know,
the evangelicals don't know what to do with me.
Yeah. You've evolved. You're going into some deeper space within yourself. And I just, it's curious to hear that's coming out. Do you feel comfortable sharing that with people and stuff? Because that's a very personal, private place you're going into. You spend a lot of time, literally like 2 or 3 hours every day, you know, in a room, some ceremony, some
rituals,
some
praying,
ritual, yeah, right,
going
exactly.
going through Eucharist and reading the Bible and reading other resources, and I'm reading the late medieval mystics that go from 1200 to 1500, and they're just.
Would it be surprise you to know you're the only person I know that's doing that?
Well, there are others, but it's not.
I don't know.
It's not common.
No. So you're now you're off on a new journey. First, it was travel the world. Then it was new experiences. I'm going to be a pirate and do other stuff crazy, and lock myself in a room and go through some other crazy experiences. And now it's another kind of journey. It's an inner journey that you're on here.
It's inner journey, but it's funny. Our vacation that we're doing in September is that we're going to Portugal for a little while. Then we're going to Madrid, and right outside of Madrid is Avila, and we're going to visit St. Teresa of Avila so I can pray with St. Teresa.
Of course.
And then
course.
We're going to Spain, or then we're going to Italy in Umbria so I can pray at Assisi with Francis of Assisi. So I'm combining my spiritual life with my
your
but
journey.
I'm in Italy and Spain. I mean, you know, right. How do you get better than that? I love Italy and Spain.
Well, I love listening to your show. I love riding along. I love to see where it's going. I'm not always sure from show to show what the thread is, but when I sit
and
back...
neither am I.
But when I sit back, I say, it's certainly been a ride, and it's certainly been an interesting ride, and with a lot of interesting people and a lot of interesting ideas. And sometimes it's fun, and sometimes it's challenging and hard to listen to, and sometimes it's, you know, I go home and I say, no, that can't be right. Really? And all of a sudden, then afterwards, we start debating politics or something, and I was like, oh, my God, you know, but it's the type of thing that we don't do enough of. It's an ongoing exploration, and here's the word, conversation.
Conversation. And, you know, as we end, Paul, I want to thank you for 4 years of friendship and guidance. You know, your expertise in this field. You have helped me to grow as a podcast host. You've helped me grow as what my content looks like. Mm-hmm. And you've just been a good friend. I look forward to every week that we come together and then we chat for 2 hours afterwards. My wife says, "Where have you been?
Where have you been? The show was over 2 hours ago here."
No, I've been with Paul.
The conversation continues, and that's what I look forward to. Because conversation, like next chapters, is there ever, I guess there is finally a last chapter, but not if you believe in an afterlife. We always tend to think of a book has only so many chapters, and yet you're always, "Oh, there's one more. There's one more."
Yeah, T.S. Eliot, the end of all things is the beginning of another.
Oh, wow. How beautiful.
That's in Four Quartets.
Well, we've done 4 hours worth of this and four more to go. So thanks for sharing. Thanks for caring. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for continuing the conversation. And I look forward to exploring these inner journeys as much as the outer journeys you took in the coming season here.
Thank you, Paul. That's very kind of you. I appreciate your time.
All right. When we get to 400, we'll have to come back and say, phew.
That's a long way away.
It's a high hill to climb here. You never know.
It's a high hill to climb.
Well, you never know. Stay tuned, folks, to the next chapter.